القرآن ذات فتوى ذات فيني then we are calling them time to go and sort it out. We emphasize the proposals. Proposals that say these are the things that we can see.
To actually accede to home affairs, to enhance our security. We all know, and all our presidents, I think we made sure that all of us, we made it very clear to Ms. Williams the other day, all our biggest challenges. And then, so more or less what we expect is how they can assist home affairs moving forward. Only if we are seeing things exactly the same. So what is this home affairs? How central is home affairs into the security of the country? On the streets, everywhere, passports, IDs, whatever. And I'm sure you may have heard that last week or so, then they said there are people that were caught with fake IDs or whatever, or syndicates that is giving IDs and all that. And also people can are promised even a smart ID card. I'm sure DG will have to brief us what is the story. I think there was an article, whether it's in a New Age or something, you know. And there are those kind of problems. But like as I'm saying, is the capacity to be able to deal with those things lies with warm bodies appointed to do appropriate warm bodies and appropriately qualified to be able to do those things. And I think that is what we are here for today. And honorable members, allow me, if the acting DG is ready then to indicate to us. We did not get the presentation, I think, of I'm sure all of you are seeing it now for the first time. So I have not really looked at the presentation, how relevant it is to what we are expecting. I did not. I'm also finding it in front of me here. But we can't postpone this meeting. It is very crucial for this committee on home affairs. And we've got to get down to it and see how far we can go with it. I'll plead with honorable members not to really ask that we postpone the meeting because we did not get the presentation in time, as we normally do. I'll plead that we proceed and hear. And the acting DG, the new DG, probably as we move forward, then they will actually understand how the committees are operating and the importance of getting the presentation a couple of days before the actual meeting. For honorable members, it's very important to do that. But I think it's, we may be stringent in future meetings. For today, I'm pleading. It's my plea landing in the
No, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, in fact, I think because we have had a preliminary interaction with the department on the very same issue, and then it is therefore an extension of that matter, I think we could continue. The information that you hear really is just to explain income and expenditure and so, but the real meat is in about two or three things. The rest is just explaining the environment. Thanks.
Okay.
Chair, I'm happy for us to proceed, but just to make the point that, normally we don't have a problem with issues that lay on the table, but this one in particular is an important item. And I really appreciate if we can get it in advance so we can just prepare for it beforehand. But I'm happy for us to proceed. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. And Honorable Sopet, you are happy. Thank you very much. And okay, I think all the political parties that are here, I think they're fine. Dadim Raja, proceed.
Thank you.
And of course is that, this other educational thing, if we could just avoid them, but speak to those that actually think to exactly what you're going to say about budgeting for Home Affairs. The problem that we are having in Home Affairs, assisting Home Affairs. The theoretical, all these other theoretical parts, you can avoid that. I don't think it is, we do have, I think it's up to page. Yeah, let's start on the parliamentary process, if it is possible.
Sure, thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. Apologies for you to get this presentation now. We hope as we engage with the committee moving forward, we should be able to give you well in advance the presentation. Chair, thank you. I hear what, Chair, you are suggesting that I start, but I think it is important that we be given an opportunity to present the presentation as we have proposed now, and I'll explain why it's important. It is important because the budget process behind this process is critical, and it must be understood by everybody. Because if all of us are not on the same page, we will then not find each other at the end. Because it will always be seen that, for instance, in your opening remarks, Chair, you rightfully said Treasury should be allocating, but it's not Treasury that allocates. And that's what I wanted to explain behind, because behind the Treasury being the face of the allocation process, there are many, many processes that undertake, that are, you know, and that process that finally gets me to write that allocation letter at the end is informed by April. So, Chair, with due respect, and I plead with you to allow me to just, I'll be quick, I won't take long, to explain the rationale behind what essentially would affect Home Affairs' budget. And the first slide is simply, the second slide, with your permission, Chair, is simply to just say, as we all know, whatever we spend, we get it in two ways, from revenue and borrowing, and I'm not going to go into the details of that slide. The second slide, which is a graphic slide, is quite critical for us and to understand where we come from 1994 to where we are in terms of just looking at monies that came in and monies that have been going out. So the background is critical. The non-interest spending is what we spend, what government spends in totality, and the revenue, the black line is the revenue. And you can see as a percentage of GDP where we were, as I could have gone back to 94, but from 96 onwards. And when things were okay for us, in terms of looking at the black line was even reached at 26% of GDP in and around 2008, just before the global financial crisis. It was, those were rosy years for South Africa from the beginning. If you recall, Chef, it is at the period between 98, 99, up to around 2008, 2009, that the government started embarking on huge programs, expensive programs. As an example, rolling out of the child support grant, increasing the, you know, the age qualification criteria, ramping up equitable share to province and municipality because we had money in the kitty. And then what did we do with non-interest spending? We ramped it up in a big, big way. That's why you see the black line, I mean the red line, from less than 20% to around 27 or 28% of GDP in 2008-2009. All because we're ramping up our spending as government. And we had the money. When the global financial crisis hit in 2008-2009, we could not stop programs. we have to sustain spending at high levels. That's why the red line is not quickly going down. It's easy because revenue that year, if we go back to the budget review of that year, revenues dropped by almost 60, 70 billion rand in 1 year. And so that's just the slide. And the next slide tells you the increases that commensurate with a black line on top over the years, say from 2000. So every year up to around 2012, we're increasing spending, meaning every year when the Minister of Finance comes to Parliament, we increase money. From 2011-12 onwards, we started reducing, meaning when you see those negative numbers, it's when we are cutting budget. We introduced something called a haircut, if you remember, and then we did that 1%, 2% of budget across all departments, and that trend, unfortunately, is continuing till today. If I have to put a percentage GDP growth on the same period, you will clearly notice that we used to grow at 5.3% in 97-98. Now we are at 1.8% in terms of what growth has been like. And we did at some point in 2009 have a serious dip in our GDP growth. Now, I thought it's important just to throw in slide 5, just in terms of the parliamentary processes. There are various portfolio committees which you want. There's two key committees which are kind of essentially our committee, finance and appropriations, and we go there every week, we are with them. And there's parliament. There's an important process in terms of our reform, whereby parliament on its own set up a budget office, parliament on its own started putting reports together, and we call them BRRR reports, budget. And every year in the media, in a budget review, there's an official response from the Minister of Finance responding to all the issues that committees and departments, both the houses, would have raised, and we formally then respond. And then we obviously come here on a quarterly basis, go to public accounts based on the spending, etc. So you fully understand the process. I cannot even try and explain the process to you. But if you look at the key process, the key step for us in the budget, the week, as soon as we present the budget, we appear before those committees, the joint committees, both houses. We appear and we defend what the Minister of Finance would have presented the previous day, meaning if it's the 26th, on the 27th, we sit and we kind of defend. And the process then goes on until now, on Thursday, when the budget vote of the President is finally voted in, and then departments have. So all I'm saying now, Chair, is that there is a process where committees engage, appropriations committee, which basically appropriates money into departments through the relevant motivations that we have put and the kind of defenses that we put in terms of what we're presenting, of what finally goes to Home Affairs as a budget allocation that I do in my current job as DDG Public Finance, not in my acting role. Because I'm the one, Chair, you are right, you must have seen my signature somewhere. I'm the one who would write a letter to Mr. Plain and say, we hereby give you so much, or we hereby cut your budget by so much, after a process that is informed by a cabinet process, which critically includes a committee called the Minister's Committee on the Budget, chaired by the Minister of Finance and 8 other ministers participate. And the backup of that process is by a committee called Medium-Term Expenditure Committee, where we sit as Treasury, including central government departments, National Treasury, Public DPME, COCTA, COCTA, DPME, or DPSA. So we sit, and then we are a subcommittee or a technical committee to the MINCOMBAT, which is a cabinet subcommittee. Now, with that background, it is important then to go into what exactly where we are currently today. And slide 6 is quite critical in that cabinet will take certain decisions based on certain imperatives facing the country. Now, we all know the 2015 Feast Must Fall campaign when it started, and the kind of put it a hole in a budget that process created. Because in that 1 year, we needed to put or to reprioritize budget to the value of 16 billion. In year two, which is the current year, we have to do the same. Now, in doing that, recognizing that there's carry-through cost, meaning costs that you incur this year are costs that you incur going to incur over the next 3 years, we have to look for money in the system. In a context of a slowdown in the growth of the economy, in the context of the earlier slide that I showed whereby we have been cutting budgets and growth is not what it is, and everyone seems to have conversed around the understanding that South Africa is not growing at the appropriate level, we then have to look for money. You will recall, members, that that year, during the MTBPS of that particular year, the stun grenades were all over in Parliament. At the time, we did not have any provision for higher education. It therefore meant, after the MTBPS, which was November, December that year, we had to, within 2 months, look for 16 billion. We then cut budgets. Yes, we did not consult, and the DGs, but we had consultations with the DGs. Including ministers were not consulted on because of the short time that we had. So when we went to cabinet on the 9th of December 2015, we went to cabinet and said, cabinet, we have cut budget to the value of 16 billion because if we have to address the zero fee increase, it's the 16 billion rand hole in the budget. And we created that room and space. So the allocation letter that I wrote on the 9th of January 2016 was simply saying to Home Affairs, your budget has been cut. And yes, there was no consultation because the budget process of that year did not take into account the 16 billion rand created by the hole. So in January of 2016, Cabinet, as I said, approved that 18 billion and 15 billion rand in tax increases because, remember, the economy is not doing well. Coupled with the tax increases, we had then to reduce budgets by 10 and 15 billion. And we specifically told departments that that reduction should, over and above from other areas, be from COE budgets. That's when the first allocation letter was reducing budgets to departments. And these measures were then tabled by the Minister of Finance last year in the February budget to say we will increase taxes, and at the same time, we will reduce spending. Why do we do that? There's a certain spending trajectory that, as a country, as a collective, we have decided to take, which is fiscal consolidation, because our debt matrix is not what it should be. If I had a debt picture here, I would show you that our debt to GDP increased from the early 90s, from 26% of GDP. If you look at this year's budget review, we're almost at 55% debt to GDP ratio. So for us to remain within acceptable levels, we have to first look at that. If you look at the second slide, I said borrowing. Borrowing is a function of your debt because your revenue comes from debt and from revenue taxes that you collect. So it is important to know that that particular year, we have to. There was a fiscal consolidation trajectory that we undertook as government and confirmed ourselves to that, informed by certain types of debt-to-GDP ratios, including a fiscal deficit that we had agreed on. So with all of that in line, we then are forced, in order to remain within the ceiling, cut budget. The economy performed badly again in the current budget that last year, September, Cabinet then approved the division of revenue as we have it now in the fiscal framework. And this framework was again imposing further reductions of 10 billion rand in 17-18 and 16 billion in 18-19 and further tax revenues and increases of 13 billion. So the current budget that members are currently engaged with in different portfolio committees, in different votes, is in reducing budget by 10 and 16 billion, including tax revenues of 13 billion. Why do we do this? We're doing this because, again, as I said, the carry-through cost of the fees must fall, including other spending imperatives that we have tabled in February. Not only higher education, there's issues around post-retirement medical subsidies, comprehensive HIV and TB program, the foreign exchange related budget pressures, because we've got a very exposure to foreign exchange rate exposure of about 1.3 billion. If you look at page 54 as an example of the budget review this year, all of that includes a reduction of about 26 billion in the spending ceiling. So, I gave you that background to understand that we introduced these measures because of the big pressures that are created. And all the other slides, Chair, that follow, then tells you the process that I've just explained in terms of arriving at a decision to cut budgets and the dates, etc. Now, every department is contributing their fair share of these cut reductions of 10 and 15 billion in the first year, and again 16 billion in the second year. If you look at slide 11, Gillian, this is where we are today. This is where we are today. We have been engaged post the non-consultative process, if you want to call it that, of 2016, November, December, to a very inclusive process last year to say, where should we be cutting? And second, what should we be funding? Because the economy is not growing. The realization was that the agenda must continue. When we introduced this in 1617, we did not say you'll experience the first cut in 1617. We said, we're informing you now, meaning in the 2016 budget, we're informing you now, as you go into 1718 and 1819, please note that you'll be expected to shed to reduce or to exit some staff. Some departments did well, and we wanted them to produce what we then termed at the time HRBP tools, plans, human resource business plans, for them to tell us, how would you remain within the budget that we have cut? Others, obviously, will use attrition. Others will use, they'll closely look into their personnel. Currently, we have a challenge. And I would prefer, and that's where I'm bringing it again here. And you can imagine, in my proper role, as I said, I'm DDG Public Finance, my duty is to engage departments. They are my clients, all 40 or 30 or whatever votes. I meet them on an ongoing basis. I know each department's story and business, its challenges and everything. Now, in that role, in the last 3 months, Chair, I can show you my notes and my diary that I am meeting departments day in and day out. All of them saying that, Treasury, we are not going to remain within budget. Home Affairs is no different. There's 140 so million that they are challenged with. I can go on with the list, but I've just put a few of those departments in slide 11. Now, that's some of the challenges from an only HR point of view that these departments are projecting to overspend their personal budget. Defense, 3 billion. You can ask, why defense? What's happening with defense? With defense, the story is as simple as you understand. You've got, we expect them to exit about 10,000 current members in the force. But then the argument is the same argument, Chair, that I think when I engage with all those generals, they tell me that our borders are porous, security of the state, all of the issues. If I speak to police and say, give me back 1.2 million worth of exits, then the issue about crime becomes an issue. And I can go on down with the list. There's no department which is not faced with the challenge that Home Affairs is faced with, insofar as COE budgets are concerned. This is only COE. We're not even talking programs, service delivery, direct service delivery programs. We're not even talking, in your case, BMA is an issue that's hanging on us. If you want to, we can talk about that later. That 141 becomes a bigger number. We can argue that I can go to SARS, for SARS to give me some money and say, but at the end of the day, there will still be a big hole, which understandably so, Chair, we do understand in terms of your opening remarks around the challenges and around what you mean. But I'll come to solutions later on. Slide number 12. Without a moderate three-year agreement, headcount will need to fall like that. Now, we haven't started negotiations. Negotiations with the unions are going to start in October 2017. I had long negotiations with Parliament last week with the Secretary and the CFO. We met for 2 hours. We met for 3 hours yesterday on the phone. Challenges here, not very far from where we are, here in Parliament. They have started negotiations with me now. There's issues about bonus, there's issues about staff. Some committees don't have secretariat, etc. So I'm just raising it so that members, all of us, understand that we are engaging with departments, and the common thread around all government departments, including Parliament, is that there's going to be shortfalls, not and which is going to be almost impossible for you to perform your functions, let alone the challenges and the issues that the chair was raising, which are quite important because, and by the way, Gillian in the system is, Wilson in the system is a spokesperson for Home Affairs. The same issues, Chair, that you raised and the same issues that Mr. Flynn raised in various meetings that she would raise on behalf of Home Affairs. And sometimes the pushback that she gets is a pushback that says, here is the bigger picture. Help us get into, understand the bigger picture. And then in that way, she then becomes defenseless, as sometimes I can be when we are faced with 40 departments and I'm potentially faced, and I can openly tell you now that there is a June 2017 report that we are all awaiting, that the country is awaiting from the Hare Commission on fees. We don't know what type of settlement or proposal that that's going to bring. So moving forward, there's a huge risk that we have to face. On one hand, and I'm not going to preach to the converted around rating agencies and investor community who are cagey whenever we even attempt to talk about increasing the expenditure ceiling or increasing our debt to GDP ratio. Cagey because they are the ones who lend us the money. They are the ones on a weekly basis we go into the market and get 15 billion rand. We only do our weekly auctions. Either we can choose them that they are expensive when you go to a bank, Mr. Blaine, when you go to a bank to buy a car, the bank will check your credit worthiness. If your ability to repay is weak, then they'll charge you high interest. If your ability to pay is okay, then you get low interest. So if you have to translate that into a broader country, the way we go into the market and borrow, the same applies. So we are very cagey and very worried that we keep what our rating as a country, including making sure that the investor community, people who buy our bonds on a weekly basis, are actually happy. If they raise concern around our debt to GDP, if they raise issues around debt, then it becomes an issue. So what makes it very worrying is the slide 15 is the wage negotiations that are going to be undertaken soon. The current salary agreement expires on the 31st of March. I don't know what type of deal we are going to have to strike this time around. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be a challenging one. And I don't want to even begin to contemplate how that deal is going to be like. So we have got challenges insofar as understanding the whole picture where we sit, all because we are not in the years, those rosy years, the plenty years, where every year we used to put money in departments. It is different now because we're taking money away from departments. We're forcing departments to remain within some expenditure limits. We're forcing departments to scale down on programs. We're forcing departments to actually come up with efficiency measures and for them to even begin to be innovative about options that they have. When I say innovation, I'm saying the department, for instance, we had a meeting, as an example, with Mr. Mavuso, the CEO, one of the DDGs in the department, to say, are there options and ways where we can generate cash and keep it to ourselves? In the conversation, I was able to say, I'll break all rules, and I'll say yes. Because one key rule is that every cent that's coming to the state must go to the National Revenue Fund and then reappropriate it through a parliamentary process. I told him we'll make sure that if you are innovative enough as a department like the way you're proposing, we should be able to then give you exemption to that or have an understanding. So that's one way that we can, you know, it shows how desperate the fiscus is, if I have to look for a better term. The fiscus is desperate for income and revenues because growth as a common factor, growth is not there because it is only through growth that you get revenue. The other option is to go and borrow, as my second slide says. Now, to go and borrow, at some point, you have to ask yourself, is this the optimum? At some point, you know, you have to ask yourself, this budget deficit, is it, can we increase it? Do we have room to increase it? And we must, as a country, as a collective, agree that maybe we shouldn't. Because if we do, we can put up slides and numbers and proof that says, if you mess up with any of the debt metrics that we have, if you mess up with any of the deficit that we currently have, you've got a likelihood that you will be priced very high as you go into the market. And pricing very high, what does it mean? It means your interest on debt is much higher. It means we are currently servicing debt, I think the number is about, 180 billion just in the interest that we're servicing debt on. Now, there's one direct charge on the National Revenue Fund. One of those is that, apart from the salaries of the legislation and others, you just simply have to take off your debt, I mean your interest, and pay. And then you can start allocating. So you can imagine if that number keeps on increasing, the 1.3 or 1.4 trillion that we have becomes small. And then we squeeze the department further. So, Chair, I don't want to even go to the summary that is there because it summarizes what I'm saying. And the message, all I'm saying is that it is accounting officers who must take the responsibility. It is the whole of government, and it's not a process that Treasury dictates. We might have, from at least since I joined the Treasury in the 90s, we might have, at the time we had enough money. We used to sit like this, and departments would come and we would say no, you'll get this margin because we had money. We had it was the year of plenty, as our rosy years, as I say. But now we are in a fix because the economy is not growing. We are in a fix because we are very cagey about the indicators or indices that we don't want to tamper with to a point where we can we lead ourselves into being junk just by the indices that would have chosen or the indicators going the other direction. So that's why it's important to focus, that's why it's important to actually tell ourselves as a country that we want to embark on those programs that will generate growth for us. So Chair, in conclusion, I did not, and apologies if I did not do that, I did not go into the, we understand, we have been engaging. We understand the challenges that Home Affairs has. We understand the importance of Home Affairs as a sector. And as I say, if you have to sit with Minister Motsoaledi and the health sector, they'll tell you how important it is to fund health because people are dying, etc. If you have to sit with defense, I was supposed to sit last night, in fact this morning, with the National Director of Public Prosecution, Advocate Abraham, and my team is sitting with him now. Everyone has got pressure in the system, and I'm not saying I have anything to, but it is important. And this is what I indicated, and as I said, solution, if that can come up as a solution. We have to look at the justice cluster as a whole, including everyone who matters in there, whether it's from SARS or police and defense, and agree if there's any room and opportunity to give more or to reallocate within the cluster. That's unfortunately our budget system and process is structured like that. The economic services, we clustered them together. The security cluster with Home Affairs included, we clustered them all together, including social departments and infrastructure-related departments. It's important that as a country, we get directive and direction, especially when we have the NDP type document. whereby, unfortunately, I'm saying it now, it is an important critical document. It's giving us to, it's showing the direction. But as a country, we have to get direction in terms of what's critical and what could be or should be funded. And that's why when we go into our own processes, we've been saying, for instance, to the department, to the presidency, let me put it that way, we need a priorities paper or a mandate paper that mandates the budget process. If the mandate paper identifies security as critical, then we embark on a reprioritization process that will allocate resources to the security cluster, including home affairs. If the reprioritize, I mean mandate says education, higher education is key. Like by default, we did like that in the last 2 years. We have to then forward. If the priorities of the ruling party of the day says higher education is going to be critical, it must be free, et cetera, then we will divert resources from other programs too. So it is critical now that a conversation, and that's what we, and not only for Home Affairs, but a conversation for powers that be, including government, including cabinet, to give a clear-cut direction as we embark on the 2017 budget process, which is starting now. And it is then become critical as we embark on negotiations for Labour to come to the party and to then ask ourselves, what is this developmental stage that we're talking about and how should it be structured? Because once we enter into that conversation, then we can decide what is critical and important. But currently, I understand, we came here before, Gillian gave us a brief, I'm here in front of you. All that we're doing, Chair, is to make sure that the sector that you are involved in, which is Home Affairs in this case, is equally adequately funded. If I have to go to the next department or next sector, they'll say the same. And the other have been saying the same, as I say, I've been meeting. I speak to the statistician general, he says, you can't do anything other than statistics. You need me. Give me more money. You've cut my budget by 150 million. And you do that across the department. So it is, I'm not giving you, honorable members, what you expect. I'm not tangibly saying to you, I'm equally introducing you to the current challenges that we have and to the frustrations, unfortunately, that I'm in now as an acting DG, at least until the 15th of June. It is going to be a challenge, honorable members and honorable chair. So I'm just leaving it there, Chair. And I know I'm not helping you and helping the situation. I'm just simply laying the challenge to you. And then we know in government, this almost is not the same presentation, but a similar type presentation. I took it to FOSA, Forum of South Africa's Directors General. I personally sat with all of them and said, this is our challenge, how do we deal with it? We have got a process for coming from there that we've identified, that we look at HR matters, that we also look at the priority setting process, that will help move the process as we continue. So, Chair, I've introduced you to our challenges, and I would humbly say that for now I leave it there. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, and I'm sure we're still going to have a meeting, the real meeting that we're going to start, if not today, sometime in future, because we have not yet started the meeting that we expected to start, really. It's just unfortunate that what we have just gone through, I think we have heard it many times in many ways as members of parliament. They are very clear, I think, about the economic outlook and all the financial things and the budgeting processes. I think this is the thing that we almost go through almost every quarter. We do come across. Honourable members, it is a little bit difficult. It is a little bit difficult that I'm sure we have heard and But we have not been taken a step forward. None. We haven't made any step forward. Probably we may have made about 2-3 steps backward. Because if you look at the presentation right at the end, the last sentence on the presentation right at the end, it seeks to say whether it rains or doesn't rain, then we are proceeding as is, and as if nothing has happened, as if you have not said anything. And you can cry until cows come home. That's what that little sentence at the end seeks to say. I may not have interpreted 100%, but that's my understanding of it. And then it seeks to say, no, Aplin, it seeks to say to you, no, get yourself organized, comply. Comply. The next 3 years, then we are continuing as we are continuing. You see? Now, I think it's, that is where our problems are. And the whole theory is the theoretical part of it, of the budgeting processes. And then, I'm sure, you have gone through all that. You should be knowing a lot more better. And even ourselves, I mean, the economic situation of the country, we are alive to that almost on a daily basis. But you see, the thing that we are saying is home affairs. Home affairs, in any country, home affairs is key. Rationality to budgeting of home affairs. And then how much priority does it enjoy to actually avoid all other consequential things. I mean, if the police talks about needing more personnel, it's because certain things are not right in within. Certain things are going wrong. Then if the soldiers want more soldiers to be employed and then all sorts of things, that means there is some sort of political uncertainty and the peace is going down and disappearing. But there are things, causal things, to all these other things. Even health, Aaron Mutualedi complains about looking for additional nurses and all that. You've got about 2, 3, 4, 5 million of people that we don't know that visit our clinics every day. And then you need more resources to clinics, you need more nurses and all that. Because there is some sort of another overburden that comes through back doors and whatever and creates these demands and all this. But then the issues that arises is the rationality. Other people or whatever is lawyers, and then I think they enjoy this word, rational thinking or whatever, of dealing with home affairs. You know, as part of a department that can solve some other problems that emanate from flaws or weaknesses from home affairs. We are not avoiding the payment to home affairs. I mean, it's the officials that we are not employing in home affairs, we are not saving. That's what one is saying. We are not saving by not employing more officials for home affairs. Because the consequence of not having those officials, then we pay the other side. That's a direct consequence. You pay the other side. You see? Now, we miss at the causal point, and then we go and meet the cost at the consequential point. And these are some of the things that I think is, like as I was trying to explain, that, you know, it's if the border is porous, people come in because we don't have adequate people there at the border post or at the border line, then we come and meet that cost when we try and deport them. We still pay when we try and deport them. And others are taking us to court every day. And then we spend this on these legal challenges. And the legal sector, I think private legal sector in South Africa, they should be enjoying a lot because the job is just coming, it's just flowing to them, all of them. The councils are smiling to the banks every day because some of the things we actually create ourselves. And then, but all what one was saying is looking at Home Affairs and what is there that we Home Affairs can do and is doing to ensure that the country is secure. And then, honourable members, let me not speak. But I was just indicating that we have not been helped. Yes, we have not been helped. That's what we say.
Thank you very much.
This meeting feels more like we're sitting in a finance portfolio than a Home Affairs portfolio. But I appreciate the attempts by the DGG to try and explain to us the situation that we're sitting in at the moment. When I woke up this morning, I was excited, but now I get here, I'm even more depressed than what I... But you can imagine if I'm so depressed, what it's like out there, Chair, for the people of our country who are even much more depressed than I am. So we understand the conditions under which Treasury is operating. They can't create miracles to produce money. It's the actions of us as politicians that actually generate the kind of outcomes that we want to see by our own conduct and the decisions that we make. So whilst they do the allocation of revenue through whatever processes, how we get that money is dependent on our own conduct as leaders and politicians of government. And the reality is this, Chair, is that for as long as we keep doing things and spend money in a way that does not justify what we're supposed to do, we're always going to end up with this kind of situation. It can't be right that we sit with the financial situation that we do, and yet you still have our government taking decisions that are extremely irresponsible. That's why we find ourselves in this situation. When I sit there every year listening to the budget presentation of the minister in parliament, and year on year, he goes on about how important it is for us to tighten our belts and do the right things and prudent expenditure and all of these fancy words. But in reality, it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. And while I understand that our revenue collection is on the decline, so too must the irresponsible expenditure. And those are decisions that not the officials make, that we as politicians make. It can't be right that you don't have enough money to fix the fence, as I call it, but yet we spend more money on protecting politicians and VIP, blue light brigades and all of that. You do that direct comparison. Do that direct comparison and you'll realize we're spending more money to protect our politicians than protecting the people of our country. You don't send a sense of confidence out to the people of the country when you spend more money on security upgrades for a president when you don't secure the borders of your own country. You're not going to send a strong message to the people to say we're doing the very best. It can't be right that we spend millions and billions of rands on fancy vehicles for politicians, but yet we complain that we don't have enough money for service delivery. All of these things are directly related. I mean, I understand that the DGG can't put these things out on the table, but those are the harsh realities that we as politicians are seeing and the people out there that are seeing. So it's not just about the economic situation that we find ourselves in. It's about the political situation that we find ourselves in and the irresponsible conduct of leaders in our society who spend our money haphazardly. Go onto the internet and just go and type the irregular and fruitless or wasteful expenditure. You'll spend days reading about it. In every municipality almost in the city, in this country, in almost every single government department, millions and billions of our hard-earned tax money is going to waste.
There's money that we could have used for some of these priorities that you referred to, that we have been referring to for years. And you know, Chair, I've been on record on a number of years now, year on year, speaking about the importance of increasing investment in immigration, because if you don't do that, you're going to end up with a situation that we end up with as far as the xenophobic violence is concerned. Like it flared up in Kwamashu last night, and is likely to flare up again in other parts of the country. So people take the law into their own hands when they realize that their own government does not spend their money properly and focus on priorities. That's what happens. And they will turn on undocumented immigrants because they don't have the confidence that we're capable of doing it, because we're looking at other priorities that are looking after our own interests. So I wanted to make that comment to add to the voice in that we get it and we understand that to some degree South Africa is not in isolation to the rest of the world. We understand that. But what exacerbates the problem is our own conduct as leaders and governments and departments and senior politicians in our country who waste our money. That's the bottom line. And if they stop doing that, at least we'll be able to resolve some of the more difficult challenges that we have. Chair, I appreciate that that Treasury has found itself in a very difficult situation after the stun grenades in Parliament to try and find the 16 billion. But I tell you that this is the culture that we are creating in our own country, because if the stun grenades are not here at Parliament, it's going to be out there in the community. Because when people don't get what they want, they're going to start. If you want something, you have to burn something. It's the culture that we're creating in our society. And this is a consequence of our poor expenditure patterns and our incorrect prioritizing of where exactly do we need to spend our money. And really, Chair, I really do want to make this appeal, and I think many of us have made this appeal in Parliament, in public, in media, in platforms, and all over the place. If we as the politicians are not going to behave properly with people's money, the people are going to turn on us, and you can see it's starting to happen. It's going to get worse. This story that we heard now is extremely depressing. And it's actually very scary if we're going to continue under that direction. Chair, I want to ask a question around the issue about the BMA, which I believe is also, at this point in time, an irresponsible decision. So not everybody is behind it. If we can't afford to employ immigration officers, where are we going to find the money for BMA? And do you know how much is it going to cost us to establish this BMA? Where are we going to get the money from? And in your opinion, can we afford it? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Yeah, Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My question is on issue of headcount management. You talk, I think there's a bullet that talks to engagement to minimize loss of critical skills. Now, looking at that, if we say we're talking about this management of this headcount, what sources of funding within the current expenditure still being considered for the transfer to fill the critical posts? And secondly, on the issue of compliance by the departments. Yes, I understand the problem we're in. But I'm concerned because, as you say, that Home Affairs, all the departments depend on Home Affairs. Yes, I understand that you say all of them, they need money. They say that you budget accounts are cut because of this and this. But looking at what is happening at this department, which really encompasses all the departments, and you said that the BMA is an issue that is hanging on all of us. Are there any budget proposal submissions from the department for immigration branch functions needed for the BMA? Because we need the BMA to function. That is our main, that is why you are really right when you say that it's an issue hanging on all of us. And lastly, are there any processes to ensure self-financing which is approved in time when needed? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Raput.
It's very scary what you have presented. And, you know, I'm talking about our committee, Home Affairs. You know, the projected shortfall, it is too high. You know, the shortfall, it is very high. And so I'm asking myself that, we know Home Affairs, it is the most critical kind of a sector. When you are born, it's Home Affairs. When you die, it's Home Affairs. When you go around the world, it's Home Affairs. So it means that really there is no any way that Home Affairs can be assisted, because it's really this with your security. There is this thing that, you know, people who deal with money, they are so stingy. And they say, you are so stingy. So people, can you really assist? Because this is about the security of your yourself, is the security of the country, all of us. And we, as Mayor Kanye have already said, the Border Management Authority, that is the bone of contention here. Whether people can say what or what, but they know that. I think even when you are sitting in your house, when we were delivering our, about the security of the country, when we say that we need a coordinated kind of our borders. So what are you saying in that regard? We really need the border management, like yesterday, because the people have been complaining that our borders are very porous. And in as much as you manage to scrap all over about the education, which I really don't know. I went back to my, I read that, the Bill of Rights. I read the Freedom Charter. It didn't speak about the higher education. It spoke about there will be free education for the basic, not for higher education. And I think somehow people are politicizing. In as much as you manage to go and look for the money all over, we don't want porous borders. Papa, please, don't be stingy. Assist us. Assist us in that regard. You can see now people that now they say that there is something that is happening there in KwaMashu this morning. It's painful every time, as if we are viewed as we are xenophobic, of which we are not, because this is more economic migrants. So assist us, because in as much as you think that we are that the statistician must also assist in that regard, because we are how many in South Africa? I think we are having more. It's not about 54 million. I think we are more than 54, probably 80 million, because we are also catering for other, foreign nationals as a caring country. people who understand finance assist us, because you are making us to be scared for absolutely nothing. Please don't make us to be scared. South Africa is very rich, and being rich, it said, don't make us to be scared. You know, presenting such kind of discuss and all. I don't want to stay in a country that makes me to feel that I'm not protected. So siyacela. This is an African land. This is our land. This is our land. People are making us to be scared for nothing. And if we can be able to share the resources that we are having, even the land issue, so I think things will be fine. They must stop scaring us about the revenues and all. So siyacela. I think the most important thing here, it's not about revenues and what. It's because some of other people are also looting. They are looting. They've looted. They started with our land, our resources, and now they're making us to lose focus. So, Ntate Mokgadiane, tell us, how can we be able to spin up things? I thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Fiedler.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I'm going to sit here from now on.
Yeah, sure.
As I'm facing you.
Yeah.
Good morning, Minister. Morning, DG, and all that. Chair, I'm a little bit concerned because we are busy trying to restructure Home Affairs, especially the PMA, which I'm a little bit concerned because I know we've been downgraded just now. But I don't want to go into detail. But the question that I want to ask, is there any way out of this, especially with the budget that has been cut? The second issue is the issue of DECO, because you mentioned if Home Affairs can bring in their own finances, you're willing to approve it. Now there is money sitting in DECO. What is happening with that money? The last issue is the issue of, there was a proposal between Treasury and Home Affairs to be working together with the BMA. What was the reason that Treasury didn't want to come up into the team? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Honorable Dambuza.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to check from the National Treasury, as far as the posts, the additional posts that are funded from on the Department of Home Affairs for this current year, how many are they at least? Because I think there has been a partial moratorium, lifting of the moratorium on the Department of Home Affairs. So I would like to check for this current year how many of those posts that are being funded. And then the other issue, Chair, what is the future funding of the provided for the programs that have not been spent for the past financial year? Because, Chairperson, I understand that there is an opportunity for the department to make vitamins. So I just want to check on that. What are the amounts for vitamins that are relocated? Then the last one. I don't know, Chair Novak, are there no differences on the ENE for 2016 and 2017. I don't know if there are no discrepancies, because I don't think it is the same allocation that was allocated in the last previous year on the ENE in terms of the MTEF. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hlophe.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Acting DG, for your presentation. I agree with you, Chair, on one thing that you have raised that says that we need to have another meeting, because as much as the presentation is very broad, it is very good, but it does not talk to things that were under our expectations with the department. As my colleague from the DA, my Honourable Mayor, was saying, after this presentation, you are more depressed than before, because coming here, we thought you were going to get solution to these challenges for this department specifically. But the acting DG opted for making a presentation, which is an eye-opener, and we must also thank you for that. But we think that there is a platform that is needed to talk about these things, because what you are presenting here in front of us does not talk to the realities that is happening that makes you to go and borrow money in order to fund departments. Let me just start by saying, Tina, is this portfolio committee, we are interested on service delivery, especially for home affairs people, because it talks to people on the ground. For instance, the DG of home affairs will recall, each time when he comes here, and we always remind him, which is not about us as we're sitting here, it's about people on the ground. When you are called by a person to say, I'm here in a long queue in one of the offices, and only to find that after 3 hours that the network is down. You just fight with the DG. What is happening in your department? Why your department is failing our people? When our people are being mistreated by securities, and when you ask the DG, who is the person who's supposed to talk to people in line to tell you that if you want to be here to do the passport or to apply for ID, this is the correct line. And the DG will tell you that, no, in fact, I don't have money to employ a person in the front desk. It's things like that you will have interest on. But you, acting DG, we have opted to share with a perspective on how the department is tracking itself as treasurer. But on your page 11, on those state departments that you have listed, if I can also just zoom in there, one department which is, let me make an example for one department which is the Department of Education, Basic Education, is not there. We are not saying to them they must cut, of which is good. I don't think any department must cut anything because it's about service delivery. But I just want to draw your attention in one department to say, yesterday I visited a school at Stenger. That school has 600 learners. They are sharing 10 toilets each. And they've been talking to the department about the school to build the toilet, and there's no funding for that. And then how do you call that when the treasurer is not telling them to cut anything, but at the same time there's nothing? They can't do the service delivery in terms of the budget of the school. Coming back to saying, the Auditor General said irregular expenditure 2016 is 31 billion in 2016 alone. Irregular expenditure, the Auditor General said so. And we are not hearing you on those kind of things to say the real problem in this country is corruption. Is corruption. Out of that 31 billion that the Auditor General was speaking about, you will recall the SAA bailout. What is that? No explanation. You will recall the jet for the president, which does not serve the purpose of the people of this country. While we are sitting here as the portfolio committee, struggling to get money, struggling to convince you to say, please, we are talking about the people here. The illicit financial flows that is leaving our shores as the country. And you, as the EFF, I just want to say that as the EFF, we have been also writing to your department, unfortunately we're not there, to say we must have correct policies, because it can be. Those money that are leaving the offshores of South Africa could be used for service delivery. But the treasure is not also zooming into those things. I'm sure, Chair, we need another platform to talk about these things. Because coming here to get another report, while Tina, we want another report, is also very depressing. And I thought when the acting DG was starting to make his presentation, he said, okay, I'll come with a proposed solution, but unfortunately, I didn't hear you. What are the proposed solutions? Because we must not lose focus. As much as we understand what you are telling us, but we also have to focus on the department. Now, what is the way out in order for us to know from here where to? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Katalia.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to thank the Deputy DDG and his team for presenting us with a picture of reality, a sobering picture of reality. And it is indeed in the reality check. In view of that, I'm particularly concerned at an emerging narrative which I've heard today and I've heard elsewhere, which is becoming ubiquitous in government circles and ANC circles, political circles, which says, give us what we ask. We are rich. Don't be stingy. We have resources. Other people are looting. The subtext is we're not looking in our own backyard, as my colleague Hanif Hussain has pointed out, and this is irresponsible. I think we need, the DA's position is very clear. We need to ensure a responsible reprioritization within the existing budget that doesn't affect our fiscal deficit, which stands at a staggering minus 3.1% of GDP, as you know, 149 billion rands in the negative. What we need is then to work within these, to prioritize intelligently, and to use the prioritization that accrues, not irresponsibly, in duplicatory behemoths like the Border Management Authority. We need to be circumspect about how we deliver to the people of our country. Thank you.
Honorable Miller, thank you, Chairperson, and my apologies for being half an hour late. I had another meeting. I did go through the presentation, and I did listen to the end of the presentation. The discussion saddens me to a certain extent, because we should not be surprised. This didn't happen overnight. This has been developing over many years. You know, when you look at the country's budget, it doesn't really differ from your own personal budget. It's basically the same. If you spend more than you earn, you're in trouble. Simple as that. You can go and borrow, and you can borrow up to a point when you get into a debt trap, where you can't pay your interest on your debt, and then you become bankrupt. It happens to the country as well. So, the colleagues did refer to some of the more visible problems in terms of vehicles for the executive or the securing of the president and those kind of things. But those are only little small symbolic things. The real problem is much worse in that respect. I saw in the presentation, for example, where the Treasury says that national departments did not curtail numbers in the last 3 years. Yes, it was to be expected. We've been sitting in one portfolio committee after the other where the pressure was put on, we need to create jobs. But it's not, and that's our philosophical point of view in terms of the economy, and I know we differ with the ruling party in that sense very dramatically. So we've always said, and we maintain that, it's not the task of government to create jobs or the civil service. Look at the numbers. And we know we differ completely, and maybe we should have a discussion about that one day, not only in this portfolio, but countrywide. We've always said you should enable the private sector, make it easy for them to create jobs. You know, there's winning recipes out there. We've always said you need a professional, small, effective civil service. But ours is becoming bigger and bigger, and now the serious crisis now is wage negotiations have to start soon. But if you give people increases every year more than the inflation rate, what do we expect is going to happen? That's where we are now. If you look at page 11 with the different departments, and I understand that we are here on behalf of Home Affairs, and we can make wonderful arguments, and the colleagues have made wonderful arguments, why please don't touch Home Affairs.
But quality must be realistic. I can assure you, each and every one of these departments will come up with exactly the same arguments. Why you should not touch defense. Why you should not touch rural development, environmental affairs. We must understand that the country as a whole is in a crisis. We got into this not overnight. We won't get out of this overnight. But this is really, really serious. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Okay. Thank you for the presentation. And it seems as if there are more questions than answers in this presentation. It's really tough for us and for the country. I just want to check Chairperson from the Treasury if there are any plans for the funding of the forthcoming DMA in relation to the need for transferring of budget from the department. Thank you very much.
Honorable, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Minister. Firstly, I think there's genuine concerns about our country. I think are generally welcome. This is our country. And we've got to solve problems together. We've got to hold hands as South Africans. And yes, the type of expenditure patterns are political choices. That's why we have social democrats, we have liberals, and so forth. I think our choice, the choice of the ANC in this instance, is that let us expand capital projects like infrastructure. And that is like someone that goes up out and buys the hand so as to have more chickens in order to feed their family. This is the approach of government. It is looking for more chickens that are going to be in a position to feed more people it finds itself having right now. So I do not regard the debt as like a consumption debt, but it is a debt that is based on creating something for the future, on creating jobs for the future, like building roads, dams, and so forth. And problems like jobs can only be resolved by us together. We know why we have lost jobs. The structure of capital investment moved away from the industry-based, labor-intensive, job-creating factories. Now we are in an environment where which is driven by services, provision of services. And we all know that provision of services does not create jobs instantly. And that is why now we've got to get to education so that we have more people that are skilled in order to provide more services so that they can employ themselves, they can create jobs themselves. I don't think the government is preventing the private sector from creating jobs. But the government says that it is going to try its best to assist in creating jobs. that is from where we are coming from. And it has tried, it is trying every day. There are public, what is it, EPWPs. It's trying to create jobs where there are no jobs, but it is trying its best. And we believe that with the infrastructure development, we are going to be in a position then to create even more enterprises and therefore more jobs. From where I stand, I see the president going out together with ministers to engage other countries in order to expand trade. And in expanding trade, we are going to have more jobs. And then where we have more jobs, then we have more growth. And then when we have more growth, then we'll have more tax. And then we'll be in a position to eventually finance these things. And therefore, I think let us not oversimplify the problems that we are having. Coming back to Home Affairs, the Department of Home Affairs has drastically reduced its irregular expenditure. It has drastically reduced its unauthorized expenditure. The type of qualification that we are having is well understood by everybody and every member in this committee, that it is because of a misunderstanding between the Department of Home Affairs and DERCO about a certain accounting mechanism. So we do not regard the Department of Home Affairs as having wasted money or perhaps allowed corruption, and we know that there are a lot of people that have been charged, and some of them have been sentenced, and some of them are before court, because the Department of Home Affairs is definitely taking steps against corruption. And the issue of the Home Affairs being under the security structure also has gone as a cluster. Has got to be looked as well closely, because no investment is going to take place when people are not safe and they do not feel safe. And the Department of Home Affairs is playing a major role in making sure that we are safe and we feel safe. So it has taken a different level in priority, because there is no economy without safe security, and then the major part of security is how you think you are safe. It's the perception part. So really, we've got to assist, because if we still want to fight downgrading as well, we've got to make sure that law enforcement is effective. We've got to make sure that our institutions, like Home Affairs, like banks, like the judiciary, are intact and even strong, so as to have a stable environment, political environment presently and then and in the future. And it is our duty to convince all stakeholders that South Africa is safe, and to make people feel safe now and in the future. Coming to the issue of revenue and expenditure, I do not know whether there are limitations to self-financing, whether it is approved. You once, the DG once mentioned the issue of the National Revenue Fund, that there has been a negotiation that perhaps some revenue may not go directly to the National Revenue Fund as the PFMA prescribes. I do not, perhaps I did not hear the DG properly. But I think there could be permutations in that area, perhaps with migration control and visa, charging more for visas, charging more for a reissue of IDs and some of the services, and then get in a way of uplifting revenue, because really reducing costs, we do not have a lot of wastage in the Department of Home Affairs. We are not having unfruitful expenditure in the Department of Home Affairs. So the real issue is to try and tackle the raising revenue and making sure that it is much, we can afford then the problem. Because if we are not having if we are not safe and we do not feel safe, and therefore people are reluctant to invest, then we are going to have leakages elsewhere in the Department of Trade and Industry. We are going to have less respondents to their programs. In the Department of Health, you are going to have more people from neighboring countries. In hospitals and so forth. So really, I think we cannot isolate the Department of Home Affairs, but there are programs that it can venture into, which perhaps with the allowance of regulation and treasury regulations and the PFMA, perhaps there could be improvisation in that area. But lastly, I think it is important to work together. South Africa, like many countries, is going through a difficult patch, and it is not only South Africa. It is many many countries, and South Africa is doing even better than many, many countries, both in Africa and in Europe. But having said that, I think it will always be better for us to work together. Where we disagree, we've got to disagree with the intention of making South Africa a better place for everyone, including investors. Thank you.
thank you very much. And I think, honourable members, the fact of the matter is that we can politic left and right, but at the end of the day, we need to secure the country. We need to secure the country. And the things that we are saying now is within the available financial resources, and then request some rational thought process that goes to the allocation of the funds. Within what we have now, we may have lost 10 billion or 20 billion, whatever. That is an issue that at the national level, then the relevant structures and authorities are trying to deal with that. But within what we have, within the fiscal envelope, rational appropriations to talk to the issues that are in front of us. And in that sense, then you start talking to an issue, Mraja. We say we can't fund the BMA. Then if you don't fund the BMA, what happens? Then defense says, no, they need more soldiers. Then you must go and fund it the other side. You now go and fund it the other side, now it's defense. Because defense then will fight for more soldiers to actually run through all the border. In practice, you have not necessarily avoided spending money on the BMA. You just have shifted it to somewhere else to still try and achieve the same objective. You know, these are some of the things that we are seeing in the thought process. How a functioning, efficient home affairs can alleviate some of the consequential problems that we see in other departments and other sectors of our economy. How can home affairs forecast? This is the thing that we are really asking. And of course, it's Honorable Melder, I think, has just raised one good point, that our country has actually been prioritizing job creation, you know, because of course is that other people can debate left and right and all that, but private investment have not come to the party in this particular area, and the state has to protect also those that are employed, and then the private sector says no, relax the protection of employees. And the unions are saying, no, you want to abuse them. And then private sector doesn't want to come to the party. Then what next must happen? Then we see it with these high levels of social security that we have embarked on. And but the fact of the matter is that while we are talking about creation of jobs, and then you have got a directive to advise the ministers and whatever, the cabinet, to say no, haircut, compensation of employees. Then they say other people must be sent home on early retirement or all sorts of things. And when somebody resigned, then departments must not fill those posts. Now, on all the departments, the departments are not the same. When a teacher resigns from education and then the Department of Education cannot fill that post, then you have got certain children that can't be taught. And what is going to flow from that is that certain children will drop out, go to the street. And when they go to the street, they create jobs for police. Then you must now fund for policemen and women to be employed, to look after those people that have dropped out, now that are stealing from everybody's house and vehicle and everything. We're going to fight it the other side now. We have to pay now for the police and the court. The courts are clogged with petty little crimes of stealing a handkerchief in Spar and all those things. The fact of the matter is that when we actually avoid funding a particular activity at the right time, we are going to spend the other side. And now we spend unwillingly. We are forced to spend. Then go and spend the other side. I don't know how we can explain this particular matter, but the thought process is the one that is key in these allocations with what we have. And as they were saying, and then the rest, we will debate these other national issues, you know, what was illicit flows and all that, the corruption and the rest. But currently we are saying, we've seen what we have. Then the allocation to these departments, how can it be done in a manner that we are not scoring own goals, shooting our own feet? You say Home Affairs must have a haircut, and then there are no immigration inspectors, they can't actually manage this, and then there are 1,000 here, then they go and occupy RTP houses, then our people then are up in arms. Then they're chasing each other. Then we send a lot of resources there to go and deal with that. Then we spend now unwillingly. Instead of spending willingly and avoid some of the things that need to be avoided, then we are forced to find ourselves forced to spend. I mean, a lot of money, the net joint, if you remember the net joint, just couple of months back, the operations that they had to undertake, why did they have to undertake those operations? The Operation Fiela. How much money we spend there? Millions. But why trying to actually respond to things that could not be prevented at the right time? Honorable Minister, maybe you can say something before Treasury respond and but I would have loved our plenary to speak first, before you speak. I think it would have been much more appropriate.
No, thanks very much, Chair. As acting DJ has indicated that we did meet. But I want to go to his slides, just the points I wanted just to raise which are important. I think it's a slide on the summary. It starts with accounting officers and the legal obligation. Mm-hmm. Can you have that slide? Who's running the slide? Where is the slide? Who's running the slide there? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, yeah.
17.
Yes, so that slide. So I just want to, it says an accounting will have a legal obligation to operate within the budget limits appropriated by Parliament. And the other one, bullet number 3, accounting officers that do not take action to ensure that they remain within appropriate budget are guilty of serious financial misconduct. I think that change is very important, so that when we come to the committee and say, Home Affairs has not fulfilled the position in 1617. It's not that I like it, it's not that I don't want to run the department properly, it's not that I didn't want to resource the department, but it's because I have to comply. That's why we said, in the 1617, we didn't fill a single position in the Department of Home Affairs. Going forward, Chair, we are within the ceiling this year. That is, can we do this quickly? It's not going to take time. So, Chair, in the 17-18, because last year we were over, I just put stars so that can quick. The first star is our 17-18. There is a row there which has got a double line. It says now the OCA budget ceiling national treasury. In year one, we've got 3.198 billion. That is our ceiling. So the positions now which are below is what you know, we're saying we can fill in order for us to remain in that amount. But what is the challenge? In the following year where I wrote 110 million, 3.42%, you see that? So what it means now is that the budget of the current year, next year it only increase with 3.42%, which is 110. But the salary increase, it's not going to be 3.42%. So once the salary increase is more than that, I will have a shortfall of about 105 million rand. So what that thing now means is that this position, maybe around about September, we must stop filling positions again. So if people resign, because I cannot, as an accounting officer, exceed the budget. So when members go to our offices, they don't find people, they go to a port of entry, there are no people. It's because of this. But I cannot exceed the ceiling. So that's all what I wanted to explain with this, to say where now we stand is that Home Affairs were cut with the budget last year, we dropped towards the ceiling, but now the effect of that is not, I don't understand, to say, how can even the increase, was it not the ceiling at least of 3198 was maintained, you know, going forward, then you would be fine. But it is cut. Then, you know, in the following year, that is the 2019-20, yes, now the increase is 7.5%. So it means it can allow the salary increase plus a 1.5%. That's why now the drop is about 78 million. So, Chair, based on that, as we met, we did sit with the team to say, where are our critical areas? The major critical area we have is the IT. Chairperson, you can't have a department which was using paper and then it automate. and we are still operating with the same type of skills and structures. It's just impossible. That's why we will sit with these issues of security of the civil service. Like within IT, I don't have one security expert who must be able to look at the vulnerability of the system. So I'm running an automated processes based on a manual processes. The people I have, they know how to buy paper and how to file and all. But now the system I'm using is going, moving more on the automation. That is the reason. The second one, Chair, we have talked about when we met, we said the other area we can look at is the inspectorate function, which are going to come into this issue of PMA, which we've been making a noise about it to say, I mean, I said in the last meeting that city of Johannesburg was announcing to appoint 1,500 metro police, one city, but Home Affairs has got 750 immigration officials. How are we going to manage that? So we raised that. And then the last one was about our civic registration. So Chair will be shrinking the staff. Now on the 6th of June, as a department, I think I informed the committee that we're having a problem where staff are taking us on call because they don't want to work on Saturdays without being paid and overtime. So the implications of that is either we can end up now saying not open offices on Saturday. What would that mean to the citizens of the country? So it's a problem. So those are the issues which we want to bring to them to be important. Check, and on this issue of PMA, I want to just deal with this thing using an analogy of a process. To say if I'm a farmer, and then I decide that, look, to fence my farm is too expensive. So the best is to say, let me let that farm not fenced. Then I trust that cows won't come in and take that harvest, even if they do so. But at least I will still get 5 tons. So that's what we're saying on this PMA. It's a choice to say, rather than protecting this country, we better leave it. Because at least if there's still money to fund police, there's still money to fund health, there's still money to fund education, whether it's not enough, as the honorable member is saying, it's fine. But we think if you are a farmer, fence your farm. And once you have fenced it, you spend money. That's why at Dodo there is a clear principle, opportunity cost. It's what Chair you are talking about. The principle of the opportunity cost says, do I spend this in order to get that? Simple arithmetic, so to speak. So we've got a choice, but we believe as a department that by putting PMA in place, yes, and we've been explaining this, Chair, we don't want new money all for PMA. No. Currently, I've got immigration officers at OR Tambo. People I'm processing, we've been giving the numbers per annum in OR Tambo only. Over 12 million people are processed there as we speak, coming with tourism and everything in this country. We are doing with what? That now if there is a PMA now, simply those people aren't going to be there, going to vanish. They are not. But what we are saying, Chair, is that Home Affairs in the OR Tambo have got only about 320 immigration officers on a 24-hour shift. Then police has got 800. Chair, go to OR Tambo now. You will see the visibility of police there. But if now those resources are combined, maybe I need only about 300
for police function. And then the difference, I need them in my counters. I don't need new money, but I need to combine that money and do something better about it. The other one, which is simple, says no. You can't compare the IT systems of SARS with any of the departments which are in the port of entry. SARS alone has got 800 staff specialists within the IT environment, whereas Home Affairs has got 60. But I don't need new money. What I need is that 800 staff who are working within the border environment will be shifting now to the border. Whether they are 100, they are better than 60, which is including secretaries. So it is not true, Chair, that by establishing BMA, you need complete new money. It can't be. Borders are operating as we speak. We can take, that's why we gave the number and say, Chair, currently, we're spending about availability of 3.8 billion rand, which is available for border management. The only issue with it is that it is scattered, and when it is scattered, it's not used to the benefit of the all. So with that 3.8 billion Chair, and I don't look at the figure of 22 billion to establish BMA, that's not what we have. And again, Chair, we are in government, we know. These things are financed through an MTF. And that clause is not going to remove just because I've got a BMA. Now it's going to start and say accounting officers have no longer obligation to do that within the budget limit. It will still remain. So even when I establish BMA with all the resources I need, I'm not going to say now close eyes and just spend the money we do not have. We're going to do that based on the funding we have. That's why our proposal is saying we are looking for a 10-year period. That's what the BMA says. It says this thing will take about 10 years, not 1 year, because what is the funding constraints. So that's why you submit a business case to Treasury to say, give me a business case. How are you going to do this so that we make sure that we can train the fiscals? We'll be doing something which must improve on what the fiscal is. And yet, Chair, we've been talking about this, but maybe it's a difficult issue to do, where we said in South Africa, we have not yet costed, Chair, the implications of illegal immigration. What is the cost of illegal immigration? So that we are able to say, this illegal immigration is costing us 50 billion rand. Once you have that figure, and then you start asking yourself a question, as you were saying, do I spend now a 5 billion in order to save the 50 billion? Chair, as a DG of Home Affairs, I would be naive if I can think that by what the thing stands now, I'm doing best for the country. I'm not. But I will do best or will do something for the country. Once we implement this thing within the funding pressures which we have, that's why I get Chair, we won't come to this committee at the end of when we're submitting our financial statements for 2016-17 and say we've overspent our budget because we've got these priorities. No, we'll be saying we've achieved this based on the resources which we have. Will continue like that. So Dodo knows I'm not overspending the personal budget. I didn't go to them and say, I've appointed so many people, whether you give me money or not. I said to them, I am within the baseline. However, these are the challenges I have. If they do an opening, I will go. If they don't, I will remain with what I have. Thanks. I wanted just to make those, as I say, on the BMA, I want to really, this issue that it's not a reckless decision, which will implement it recklessly. We will implement it for the benefit of the country.
No, thank you very much. I think we'll continue and persuade the Honorable Hussein about the BMA. We'll continue to persuade him because I'm sure maybe just a little bit of persuasion may still give results, because You know, it's currently Honorable Hussein knows. We have got nobody to account what happens on our border. We have got nobody now. Because when he wants anybody to account on what happens across our border, he must call defense, he must call police, he must call home affairs, he must call agriculture, he must call environmental affairs, and all of them, they are just scattered. Even sometimes intelligence, because some of these departments will tell you that no, the intelligence department is not giving us the kind of intelligence that we require to be able to stop certain things from happening. They don't trust us with their intelligence information, and hence we can't perform. And then, you know, there is nobody to account on the security of our borders. None. And then the aim of having a border management authority is to create an institution that will account on what happens across our borders. When we talk about vehicles crossing at the Swaziland or whatever, Ngwavuma area, crossing the border to Mozambique, we have got somebody that will call to come and sit here and tell us what next, what are you doing to stop that. Currently, nobody. Nobody. But a lot of money spent to try all sorts of things to actually protect our country. But then you are finding this money in all sorts of corners. And some of the money spent by junior officials that can't take even correct decisions. Certain departments deploy junior officials, whereas another department deploy a very senior official who wants to have a counterpart that can take decisions with. But then there's a disparity. There's a complete disparity. The other one can't take decisions. We'll carry this to some supervisor in Pretoria. And whereas they are in Kinshasa Airport. The other one says taking decisions and say no, let's do this. But the other one can't say yes. Says no, I'll come back. Must still go and phone somebody in Pretoria. And that person lacks the context of the discussion. And then he responds in a haywire manner. That doesn't talk to the real situation on the ground because it is not actually engaged in the discussion. These are the problems that we are having on the ground. The Honorable Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I guess it's afternoon, morning, Honorable Member. I've had so many meetings. I also really would like to thank colleagues from Treasury for honoring the committee's invitation just to engage. I think I want to agree with Treasury on one or two things. The situation which developed around the crisis in education, it created an environment whereby Treasury will come forward and say, these are decisions which we have made. And of course, our understanding then was that there would have to be ongoing engagements on budgeting going forward. And so when I heard the chair saying there's this meeting, I really appreciated it because I think what we need to do is to introspect developments within Home Affairs, where it comes from, where is it, what are priorities, and be able to look at action lines. Otherwise, if we generalize based on health or this other department, we won't get any closer to the engagement that we are expected to go through. In my view, it's good that I've just come through to this department. I've been following it from cabinet committees. Clearly, there are quite a number of decisions that have been taken around the mandate of Home Affairs. So we have an opportunity now to look at whether those functions or responsibilities of Home Affairs, in other words, the mandate, is it budgeted for? Because if you have a mandate as a country that is not budgeted for, you are in trouble. I was even looking at what I signed with the president and said, but based on this discussion, even what the president wrote as my mandate, it's a problem. Because the DG is not going to step a red line and make sure that I succeed. So we need to look at the conversation and Tate Mofajane around the action lines. And of course, no department is an island. We accept the economic outlook. I mean, it's discussed everywhere. But the action lines of Home Affairs, they are done within a cohort of other departments. So it's a question, I think, closer to what the DG was saying, of looking at those responsibilities within a league of other departments. If more responsibles have come over to Home Affairs, it's a logical thing that we begin to look at how we play around. Because what we all have to defend is to make sure that the country is not ridiculed like a joke, where you give a mandate, you say things, and then you don't budget for them. Government doesn't work like an NGO. It's completely different from an NGO. The security, maybe starting with the GDP. Many people, when they talk about the growth of the GDP, they will look at traditional economic departments, like trade and industry, economic development, you name it. But I cannot imagine a situation where the country is seriously investing, inviting investors, creating a conducive environment for investors, coming up with special economic zones, with budget for incentives, they come to our country. And then when they get to that country, they find that the national identity system is kokai, Jeremegar. Nobody who knows who is what. Sometimes they'll see the police bouncing at their factory saying, these are not South Africans. What's the percentage of those? It's going to be a chaos if we don't clean up the Home Affairs thing. Vis-a-vis the top priorities of dealing with the GDP. The question of critical skills, everywhere you hear people say, we have to focus on that. Because without that, an investor, instead of coming here, will say, I'd rather go to Malaysia or India, because people there have skills. And in my understanding, in terms of the mandate of Home Affairs, they have to actively involve in facilitating this movement and that the country acquire the critical skills for the economy. So again, it's a question of looking, where is that money going to come from? It's going to come from the cohort which is doing that. And we have examples to go by. In 2009, the money for skills was with the Department of Labor, but it was taken to higher education because of the importance of education not only being purely academic, but producing skills. So the approach then was not looking at departments, but was looking at action lines which were meant to help government honor the mandate of each and every department. One can go on besides, I've mentioned a few, this radical socio-economic transformation, which is about the inclusive agenda in this country. We can't afford always to hear that highly unequal. And we almost make it like a norm that South Africa should be known as a highly unequal society. In other words, we are a high-risk country. Documented now everywhere, World Bank, IMF, all the important economic institutions that are monitoring countries, they will say that. But the Department of Home Affairs has to play an important role, starting with the national identity system, that it should be secure, it should be accurate and modernized. Because again, investors will say, I can't wait for 6 months before I get my visa or a permit. And so, you know, I can feel the frustrations for the DG because you carry a huge mandate in taking your country forward. Even from what Honorable Chope was saying, a satisfaction of our citizens. Those calls of long lines of people going back and for coming backward and forward 3 days, having spent money, you get it all the time, 24/7. I mean, the DG can tell you, there was a time when within my few weeks here, I wanted to change the number, and then later I realized, no, what's the point? They will get even the new number. Same concern and desperation of this identity, which is a right in terms of our constitution. We cannot infringe on that one. The right which is given in the constitution. So I think we must take it, for me, Chairperson, this is the start of an important conversation. But I think it should be looked at from key priorities, action lines, which is not about home affairs, it's about the mandate. If we make that a starting point, then I think we can have a conversation which is realistic. When it comes to border management authority bill, and again, Chairperson, I hope we will, more and more the committee will have time to do some studies. You see, we have been on this for too long, but it was, I think, 2014 when the President decisively pushed the issue of the Border Management Authority. The whole world is moving in a particular direction. I'm not aware of any country, a sovereign state, where people walk in and out. Maybe we are the only ones. For me, it's actually even shocking that we're still debating whether we have to strengthen it or not. I find it a backward discussion. Also, given where we are, the security risk coming with this globalization, it's not only good, credible people who are moving around, but also people who are angry, people who want to destroy, you know, a capitalist, as they say. They are looking for base centers where they can sneak in and initiate all sorts of operations. So I think we owe our people something in terms of not being left behind. From an automation and being serious about securing our borders using modern technology primarily. And highly skilled people. That's another thing. You know, I was talking to the department about it, and I find that there's something fundamentally wrong in Home Affairs. If they can't even afford today to get the people with appropriate skills. So core essential functions. It creates a crisis for people, innocent people, our citizens, who assume the government is incompetent to protect them. So, Chair, I'm sorry to take long, but I really didn't want us to think ideological about this, but to really look at the mandate and action lines that will help this country to get there. If we can fund those, I'm sure we can. There's no action line which is in isolation. I had wanted also to talk about these SDGs, which are part of the Sustainable Development Goals, and saying, in line with what the Chair was saying, that some of the things you might not do and you pay a price somewhere. And so it's like there are too many prizes. Depending on the options and choices we take, we might find that the budget that is gonna be used on the other side, it doubles or triples what is an allocation for now. So I'm grateful I could come in. I hope there'll be more engagement.
No, it's, thank you very much, and I'm sure those that are following some of the international trends will realize that a couple of years back we had security uncertainties in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, and all that. And others never thought that that thing will come to their doorstep. And all of a sudden in the U.S., then they started having elements of that. Then all of a sudden Germany had elements of that. All of a sudden France now starts having elements of that. Of late, it is Great Britain right in Manchester. And it's the Philippines, they are begging them almost every day, 24/7. It's in their doorstep. It's now a crisis. Now resources must be channeled there. So even ourselves, if we think we are immune, one of these days, it will be in our backyard. And then we will actually revisit this discussion if ever we're going to have an opportunity to discuss. Because if we have to have the situation like in Syria, we won't even be able to have a meeting. Because everybody will be running away from any other place. But then we'll still talk these kind of things and say, what have we done or what have we not done that we find ourselves landing in this situation where you have got a crisis in the middle of Cape Town. People are just enjoying themselves in a party. There is a singer that has come to entertain them. Then they are happy there. Somebody just blow a bomb in the middle of them. Everything just turns upside down. Then the first question that will arise is, how did this person come into the country? Did we know this particular person? Then others will start saying, oh, it's a foreign IS member or Islamic what. Then he has crossed the border so many times. Then he say, no, but what have you done? Then the issues of capacity to be able to deal with those things then start cropping in. And honorable members, I think we can't labor. We can't labor more. And I think we definitely need to really say that the DG of Home Affairs and the acting DG, depending how long you act, but as long as you are in the acting position, then continue the engagement. Continue the engagement and provide leadership in resolving some of the things that undermine our security within the Home Affairs Department. It has been reclassified as a security in the security cluster. Hence, we expect all the officials of Home Affairs, wherever they are, whatever they do, there must be that security consciousness. When they sign a piece of paper, then there must be security consciousness as well. It's no longer just sign and just give a birth certificate, just sign an ID to be issued to a person, sign a visa to be given to a particular person without considering the security aspects of the thing. That's what we expect now, that that mandate will bring that element in. Then the question is the current crop of Home Affairs officials have the necessary security skills to be able to discharge that function with security consciousness? The likelihood is no. That means certain individuals have to be employed to come or further training of people to be able to discharge that kind of a thing. And it will need resources. Mm-hmm. If there is anything to say, it's an opportunity.
Thank you, Chair. All members, thank you very much for the comments and the Minister and the DG. I will just respond to one or two, but I take the spirit of the conversation to be inputs and issues that members raise. Some of them really are comments and that we need to take to heart as we embark on this difficult journey and conversation. Every time, I come to this point in a conversation like this, including the last meeting, by the way, DG, I had to phone another DG, an accounting officer, who, in your cluster, and I won't mention him, and I say, all I need is 200 million from your budget, because I want to give it to Home Affairs. This was well after we met. Because of the inspiration and the understanding that I have with what is important, and that's the same feeling I had last time, as honorable members were going about the importance of the function. Because it is quite critical, and I think, and Minister puts it, if we have to start this important conversation and agree, as the executive, there's no need for the legislature to even direct us like the way they are doing now. If I have to put it like that, to say, the executive must have a conversation on the action line. Because that's what I was saying at the beginning, that once the priorities or the mandates or the action lines are clearly drawn, it then makes life easy. And I believe in that conversation, the same feeling that drove me to phone this accounting officer and say, all I think you need is 200 million that I want to give to Home Affairs per year. It will make a difference, because it is in that conversation that we are able to convince each other as to what are the priorities. Because certainly, yes, honorable member, I think you are right in terms of, from the day you're born until you die, you need Home Affairs all the way. There's no doubt about it. Just on the slide on the list is just an example of in fact, it's real, but it's just that education, for instance, would not be there. Other departments would not be there because they are small. And education in particular is because the education function is a provincial function, so the budgets of education won't find the way in this kind of a presentation. So but we've got details. Almost all departments are under pressure. The BMA is quite a critical. The conversation has been happening. I was not directly involved, but I know in terms of where the issue is and the discussion. And I know that the Deputy President, and I was fortunate to have said in one of the meetings towards the end of last year, where the Deputy President, the Minister of Home Affairs at the time, and the Deputy Minister of Finance were faced with the matter, and that has been ongoing in the discussion. But I don't think the question, I'm questioning that, because there is a bill, there's a process that I don't think I can question and start saying it shouldn't happen or it should happen, no. But I think we come in where if the process unfolds in whichever way it unfolds, and I know we've got a three-way conversation with SARS, and then we've had discussions, and that's ongoing. The issue around funding it, and Honorable Chair, you're right. If the economy does not grow in terms of how I approach this meeting, we will be forced to within the ceiling, to within the available resources, to say how do we fund it and make it happen in a way that it should happen. And the accounting office, I guess, will put a strong case as to why at the time it should happen. And we'll obviously look at the cluster and say how do we make reprioritization so that we fund it. And I don't think it's an issue of saying, or me coming here today and say, sorry, we are not going to be funding BMA or anything. I don't think we are saying that. We are saying, let the process unfold in the conversation that has always been happening, obviously with the direction of cabinet, and then the challenge that we will have at the end as a collective will be, how then do we fund it, and how do we see? Do you want to see it over a three-year period, or do you want to see it over a 10-year period, etc. And the action line that the minister is thinking about is important, because when that action line conversation happens, it then also determines that vertical division of revenue, meaning across all three spheres of government. Because the vertical division decides how much goes to municipalities and where the metro, because that's where when we were conversing with the DG in our meeting, he was able to say, if you look around the window at every corner in the city of Tshwane and every intersection, there's three, like, you can even find 12 in its intersection. And that's across the city. So when you look at all of them, there's hundreds and hundreds of officers on a daily basis. And all he's saying is that I envy those. I wish they were mine. I can just use them. And now, then it calls for a vertical conversation of revenue discussion. To say, yes, maybe we should not be funding, the resources that should go to the to the local level. For the purpose of this should be diverted. But because that global conversation that talks to the action line and the mandate doesn't happen in a way that it should happen. Because that's when we will know how to then reprioritize, because we would have said at the point that it's important to safeguard the borders. It is important for Home Affairs services to be scaled up. And the Minister of Finance currently, Minister Kigaba, I mean, he has mentioned it so many times to me in the last 6 weeks that he's been with us. Especially when you engage with rating agencies, he would say, I so much wish that we have had the Minister of Home Affairs here. Because where he sits, he understands now how to connect the two. And all the issues that, Minister, you're raising are so relevant. In that the conversation becomes an incomplete conversation when we engage with investors, when you, as Home Affairs sector, understand how you can contribute to economic development, because that connection is not seen. And how then it's also important that Home Affairs should actually be also part not only the security cluster, but also the economic cluster. The clear connection was the tourism example, whereby you tourists come to South Africa, they queue for 2 hours because there's one or two immigration officers to stamp. And it happened with me, actually. I'm sitting with a very important person in London and on a flight to London, and he was complaining. And he says, who are you? I said, no, my name is so-and-so, and he started conversing. And he explained, and I understand, oh, this man is the only one that you can only read about in newspapers. He said, I saw you going through, because I mean, I happened to, at the time, had a diplomatic passport. So I went through the corner, because it was quick. I was not going to go through that long queue. But then he recognized me, that he saw me going through, and he queued for 2 hours, and then we just happened to sit next to each other. And then it made so much sense, and he says, look, I mean, if you guys don't ramp this thing up, make sure that you had all those computers full of people. You're going to lose people like me who don't have the patience. And it's important that you sometimes lose that one person who's critical to bring in that $10 billion FDI and pump in the South African economy. And that person becomes, and they go to the Middle East or somewhere else too. So all of these issues are related, and we have to look at them like that, okay, in one way. Now, the just addressing a general, I understand, I'm convinced, I mean, it's important that we look at Home Affairs in the way that we want to look at. And by the way, slide number 17, we are encouraged. I'm not saying this because I like Mr. Plenty, no. I'm saying it because he has demonstrated, and one or two other DGs, accounting officers, and it's for that reason, by the way, that we have this slide. Bullet. That says variations to current appropriations act can only be considered in terms of the adjustment appropriation bill. Now, as we go along, why? Because, and in fact, we will then sing aloud. Okay, and that will exercise in terms of our own responsibilities. Consider such adjustment. We will consider some adjustments. Will also take into account the efforts of the accounting officer to meet the time limit, the limit set out and other objective factors. Home Affairs was one of those departments who were at pains to wanting to remain, like you are saying. It's not that others are simply saying, and I'm saying that, others are simply defying us and saying, we hear you, but we'll do our own thing. So we will remember that sub-bullet, the last but one sub-bullet, when we approach this. And we will have to look into that you remain despite tough situations. So we won't forget the discipline that you have demonstrated as you move along over and above others who did not. But I'm not saying yes, we will look at you. makes sense, because it just makes the case easy. That, and what we are preaching and what we continue to preach, and you heard me, colleague, I mean, one of our members this morning saying, it's important that we approach our approach of our work as accounting office or as departments as per one. It's a legal obligation. Parliament does an appropriation act that gives you certain allocations. So the fiscal discipline that we are known for as a country for years, we should maintain, irrespective of the challenge that we have. And then we obviously have to recognize and note those that continue to enforce the disciplines that are needed, and then not approach them like any other. Okay, so I think that's a, I'm just, without saying too much, DG, I'm just saying we know that, and we are encouraged by the cooperation that you've demonstrated throughout the budget process that really calls for difficult environments and environment. So yes, I think all hands on deck. We have to, yes, we'll go somewhere. And now, the challenge with this conversation, I could have chosen to have many slides talking about SOCs and their challenges, irregular expenditure. I could even have taken you through if there was an issue on Friday night on ANN7 in the newspapers, everywhere on Twitter. I could have taken you to all of that. But I think it's the space and the environment is quite critical. And I'm just recognizing the point because honorable members raised it, and I won't just want to not talk about it. But the focus was, that's why I titled my presentation, Compensation Budget. I could have chosen to just give you a global economic situation and actually make you more depressed in terms of, but the reality is that we're dealing with this, because yes, I mean, illicit flows, we know what you're losing every year, the whole of Africa, we've got studies that prove that, but it is important that for the purpose of the conversation today that we take into account the issues that the honorable members and the minister and the DG are raising, and deal and take them to heart. Because it's at the end of the day, you up to you to how you convince MTEC. Because at the time, you know, then I tend to stop him being your, I become an MTEC member and take out my gloves when Dylan presents your case in front of all of us. That's unfortunately how the system is structured. And then I ask a difficult question. Why didn't you look at that? Why didn't, it's easier when sometimes the conversation one is exposed like the way was exposed today in this discussion. And so I think, unless if there's any big, serious thing that I thought I should respond to, but I just took most in the form, in the spirit of comments that we must take into others your approach, and I will leave it there. Thank you.
Well, I think you have done your best, and I think generally all what we are saying is that go back, you guys. You are technocrats, you are appropriately qualified, and you are the chief advisors of the politicians. This cabinet, all this cabinet, what is it called, cabinet budget committees and all that. Without you, there is nothing that they are going to do. That's why we are speaking to the people that actually crafted these advices, to have rational thinking, and through their thought process must be properly informed, and then they will provide appropriate advice to those cabinet members. Because surely there is no cabinet member that is going to defy your advice. Will be at risk, that has got no research capacity to really say that no, what you are saying is nonsense and whatever. You know, it's they rely on you because you work with these things and you are appropriately qualified, and when you advise them, and then they think that you have really applied your mind on it, and therefore that's why we're trying to impact at the right level of the value chain. We try to impact at the right level of the value chain, and of course is that Jillian, probably we may try to procure some AK-47s when you go to that meeting. You must go and find tooth and nail and remove everybody that blocks you to achieve Home Affairs interest. And so you'll assist us, and then to try to continue. I'm sure you have heard the context. We are not saying that we should be the preferred department. No, just look at the mandate. You know, so when you miss a mandate of Home Affairs, you know, if you are sitting at a hospital, give birth to a child, there's nobody to record the birth. What is the impact of that? Very huge. Very huge. Honorable members, I think what we can say is that maybe you can hear the DG of Treasury and the Home Affairs sometimes around August. Yeah, somewhere around August, maybe you can, we can come and be told that noise. How are things being sorted out wherever it is possible to sort out? Yes, wherever it is possible to sort out, maybe we have a similar engagement somewhere around August. Mr. Flynn, I think you would have actually reached quite a lot of consensuses and or having failed in many attempts by that time. You should be able to say, no, I raised my hand on this one, I failed this one, expect delivery and will account at the end of the year. And that's it. Honorable members, I think we need to thank the acting DG of Treasury. And Gillian for having come here and entertain us. And we hope that this will take us forward. You know, it's as one country, one government, and then committed to deliver to our citizens. And we hope that the continuous engagement, they may be robust, but the aim is for us to be able to achieve one goal, give better life to our people, and that's it. Then on that score, I think, honorable members, then we should be able to release the acting DG if he is having any other engagement. We have got minutes in front of us that we need to look at. And then also, of course, I forgot to thank Mandiwana that has crossed the floor. Okay, and I think that is underscore Treasury, then I'm sure it's given the opportunity to leave if ever they want to leave and engage on other important business. And of course, it's DG. Yeah, you may be released, but not Mabuso. Mabuso still has to explain what happened to Home Affairs when he's in that place. Yeah. It would have been nice if the DG is here and the minister, but up to now it is not that, has not reached that level. It's not reached that level. Yes. Okay, thank you. Sam, you have got no right to continue to make noise. Mabuso, you are on the floor.
No, thank you, Chair.
Maximum 3 minutes.
No, Chair, just to indicate that what happened in Nelspruit is the issue that continues to be developed of opportunistic litigation. What happened in this case is that there was a judgment that was obtained by a gentleman who alleged that he was arrested unlawfully by the immigration officers. He's a Cameroonian national. But on the day when the matter was set down for court, there was no legal representation for Home Affairs, hence the verdict against the court order against the department. Subsequent to that, they then took a claim which led to a sheriff attaching some of the goods of that particular office. But we have since dealt with the matter. The office is back today operational. After we intervened over the weekend. But we are dealing with matters. I must indicate that we have put a system where we track all the matters that are on the roll in different courts, because some of the matters are in high courts and lower courts, because there is no integrated system that we are able to, you know, some of the matters also happen, you know, that they coincide in different courts, where we would then ask the state attorney to ensure that we are represented there. But I think this is one of those cases where we were not represented, hence our was issued against us. So we are definitely always contesting that moving forward.
What is the value of the attachment? 150,000. I think they are almost going to take all the
furniture. Well, sir, they took the computers and the chairs. What is very strange is that when we spoke to the sheriff, I think the proposal from the sheriff at the time, we were told that he wanted to take the cars, but someone said no. I think in order to have an impact, they decided to take the computers. I think it was more of some of the sheriff was saying last week to say that we need to investigate some of the officials who normally recommend a legal route to clients, because in this instance it is alleged that there was an official who said no, rather take furniture than the cars. So we're like saying that we're inconveniencing the public, you know, instead of rather, you know, if they've taken the cars, they'll be inconveniencing officials, because those are the cars of the state, and then would have dealt with the matter differently. But somebody might said, so we're investigating that part to say who is that individual who recommended that, because that has led to 2 days of non-production and impact on the citizens. So with that, we will definitely have to come back and report to say what transpired in that investigation.
Honorable Mazar, it looks like you are ready to speak.
Thank you, Chairperson. The fact is nobody can take any legal action against the department unless they serve documentation on the department. Be that the summons or be that an application, it must have been served somewhere and somebody didn't act.
Actually, that is the case, the Honorable Melder, why I'm raising this particular matter. Somebody else, either at the provincial level, has to actually put his or her head on the block and take responsibility, because the office was closed last week Friday, and then yesterday it was still closed, and people could not access it. And surely that the sheriff is not going to just come and take furniture. The first step, I think, if I still know correctly, unless if things have changed, they will come and identify assets to attach first and disappear. And they may end up saying, don't move this and that and that and that and that until blah, 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 blah happens. And then coming to take them and remove is another step at a later date. And what now Honorable Member is saying is correct. Somebody did not do the work that is supposed to be done. And they will definitely really, I'm not sure whether there's any other member that wants to speak on this matter. But at the end of the day, Mabuso, is that it is typical of a thing that can happen in any other office. It needs to be nipped in the bud straight away now. When you're a provincial manager, you are expected to manage the affairs of home affairs in that province. And then we can't have a situation where this kind of things, an office just gets closed. And then, but somebody else is still having his office and civil chairs and all that without taking accountability. So we expect that when you come back, that you indicate the steps that are taken to correct the situation, that it doesn't repeat itself.
Thank you very much. I think Honorable Miller is correct. There was a process which obviously involved the state attorneys, but we'll come back with a full report what transpired in detail.
Now, thank you very much. Then you are released with your research. Honorable members, the minutes. Or just before I speak to the minister, we have got the challenges in terms of our program. And then Adam, I think, will just speak to some of the challenges. We were supposed to be meeting CETA and all that. And,
But then the department as well on a later date, but there are challenges. Adam?
Good afternoon, honourable members. Firstly, the meeting next week we have to cancel, both due to the unavailability of Home Affairs to meet with CETA next week. They wanted to be there and they're not available. And there's also a plenary related to the BMA bill in the morning that members will need might need to attend. So the meeting next week has been cancelled. The following week we were supposed to meet, we were going to postpone the CETA meeting until then, but then CETA is not available because they have other parliamentary obligations. So we're tentatively going to be having an address by Home Affairs on the migration policy. So some members attended the policy conference, not everybody. So there will be a briefing by Home Affairs on the migration policy. We'll send an update by email just to inform you at this stage. And then the two items on CETA and the first quarter expenditure will be moved to the next term in August. And then just to indicate that there's still some ongoing negotiations about when the study tour is going to happen, because they want to postpone it because of the presidential debate whilst we're supposed to be on study tour. So they propose a later date, but the chairperson is trying to see if we can negotiate to keep it at the same date. So we'll still keep you informed in that regard. So it's not been finalized yet.
Yeah, I think we can speak to the honourable members on that specific one. Of course, is that the House has indicated that there is a likelihood that they will not approve it because it coincides with the day that the President will be coming to answer questions. So I have made a request for an urgent meeting with the Chief Whip and the Speaker's office. When I leave here, I just hope that I'll find one of them and try and negotiate, because international trips like this one, with hardly 4 weeks left like this, it's not easy to change dates because you frustrate the embassies on the other side and all sorts of things. And I just hope that they will understand, but I'm going to attempt, because in any way when the president answers questions we don't vote, so it's I believe that maybe we may be able to convince somebody and them to agree to this. But it's going to be a tough thing. I will definitely inform you, I think, on our chart as well, and those that are available on the chart, I'll inform if there is any outcome that's negative. No, or both, whether positive or negative, I'll inform you. I won't wait for next week's meeting because it will be too far. Honourable members, we have got a set of meetings minutes on the 8th of March. I think that was, we were on the clock by clock under the PG Amendment Bill. Is that correct? Honourable members? Refugees Amendment Bill clause by clause on the 8th of March. Are you having those? That's where we are just approving the clauses. Yeah. And does it matter?
Well, in fact, on reading the minutes, I agreed with everything except the attendance. I was not sure when perhaps the attendance needed to be checked, but I recalled everything, every decision of that meeting. Therefore, I propose that we adopt the minutes.
Honourable is moving for the adoption of that.
And the
anyone that second? Honourable Nisi? Honourable Nisi second the move to adopt the minutes. Anyone who has got a counter, Honourable Shopper?
I don't have a counter, but I want to correct. I was not absent. I eat in an apple chair.
Virus,
no.
Honourable Shopper, can we then charge Adam and Eddie to go in and look at that? And correct it as the outcome will be. And then you will explain to us in the next meeting whether you agree with Honorable Shobo or you don't agree. Well, thank you very much for that set of minutes that the minister adopted. And then we've got a set of minutes on the 2nd of May, where we're dealing with the Electoral Commission and also the postmortem on local government elections. Honorable members, on this one, I just want to indicate that I've tried to speak to the acting CEO of IEC that we require now the complete finalized document of their the post-mortem of the elections. Remember that other day they were just giving us a presentation. We expect that they will produce a final document. Then I said when they've done so, then they should make sure that we receive those copies. The minutes, the first page on attendance. No query. On the second page. None. The third page. None. Then the fourth page, which is the last page. Then on the committee decisions, the IEC should table proposed amendments to the Electoral Act as soon as possible in preparations for the 2019 provincial and national elections. The IEC should strive for a clean audit. Legislation should be amended to include that no campaigning be done on voting days, either through the television or social media, as well as later the repercussions. That's it. Honorable Melder?
I propose the adoption.
Honorable Melder moves for the adoption of this minute. Anyone who second that? Merapuji second adoption of this set of minutes. Anyone that is agreed? None, then this minutes of the 2nd of May, then they are duly adopted. Then we've got a set of minutes for the 9th of May, where we're speaking to government printing work. And I think that's the day when we had the brand new minister as well. On the attendance, what's happening, Honorable Kipland?
No, sir, just want to find out, is she really brand new?
Yeah, she was a brand new.
No, she's not.
Yeah, okay.
She's coming from the camp. She's not brand new.
No, there's no camp. Which camp are you talking about?
The right camp.
She was a brand new minister.
The camp to Dubai.
I'm not saying that he's a brand new cabinet member. I'm saying he's a brand new minister. You see, then the second page. Honorable members are happy. Page 3. Mekenya.
On page 2, an apology. The customer just talked to Jefferson, putting that message. ANC Glad would arrive late, and other members of the committee are all expected to arrive.
Yes. And they did arrive. What was happening is that there were other members that were not in at that time. But then we are saying that we expect those members to arrive because they have not apologized. That's what we're trying to say. Yes, and then and you did arrive, many of you. Is that the only thing? Okay. And then I was on page 3. Then we can go to page 4, which is the last page. course, we are calling for GPW also to strive for a green audit, and then to ensure that people that work within their premises are vetted. And then we expect that the bill to convert GPW to a SOC then to be expedited. And also, of course, is that when they purchased their printers, I think there were equipment that they were purchasing, and then they said they are going to wait for the building to be completed. We advise them that no, they must try and match the time that are required, the lead time.
I second Chairperson, since there is a question about Piglen. If you don't follow protocol, you won't be on this paper.
Is there anybody that has got a problem with the set of minutes? None. The minutes are still adopted. Then the next set of minutes, honorable members, is for the 16th of May. We were speaking to the Department of Home Affairs, adoption of the budget vote, as well as the committee annual business plan. 16 May. The first page on attendance. No worry, the second page. I don't know what is happening to these pages. At the bottom there you have got two page numbers. And the other one is just constant. It's a tool that continues YOY. But it's fine. On my document, I don't know. Page 3? No. Page 2 is the last one.
That's the last one.
Yes. And then we just adopted the budget vote report on that day and the business plan. And then you'll remember that the EFF said we'll raise their issues in the budget debate. They did not want to say anything. I think that's the true record. Does it clear?
Chairperson, I'll move for adoption because I see there's two other people that follow me. Dr. Mulder and Mrs. T. E. Kenny. Thank you very much.
Okay. And then Honorable Biglian is moving for adoption, and then who's supporting Honorable Kenny?
Thanks, Chairperson.
Order. Honorable Kenny.
I'm supporting the budget. With due respect to you, Chairperson, on the item 5.1.
5.1?
No. I'm sorry. Which one is this one? Oh, no, 4. The last page, the last sentence. If you can just explain to us, because this last line talks about the Lesotho election.
Oh,
can't protect the Chairperson. He's telling the title of the title and hates now. So we talked about the Ted Jones and now the President for one of the continuum could not change. Just to hear from that, if that is...
It does need clarification.
Yeah, that's clarification on that issue.
Look, this one, there is very little to say. That when I actually tried to speak to the House Chair responsible for that, I was told that... we are actually not available, and they require to only one person from our parliament, and that responsibility to identify that person then has been shifted to the chief whip. And I'm not sure whether the chief whip has made that identification. Ordinarily, we know that there is a SADC PF whatever that. Moves quite a lot of people, especially within the Sotho here. Our parliament usually is expected to contribute a good number of people because of the proximity and to save some of the larger countries that are a little bit far. But this time around, it looks like, I don't know whether it's because of these budget processes or whatever, but I'm informed that it's only one member that's expected to be contributed to the team that goes to the show. But I don't know the reason. Thank you very much.
I support
them. So the minister has been supported. Anyone who has got who would have been supported them? Nothing. Then the minister duly agreed to. I think we are now on the last one, honourable members, on the 23rd of May. The fourth quarter performance and expenditure report with the Department of Home Affairs. On attendance, none, but of course is that we have got Honorable Casalia. You are marked a visiting member. I think it's the DA must indicate to us if you are a member or alternate member, it must be clear. You can't call you a visiting member in your parliament. You can't sit it in your own parliament.
We will clarify that I'm not a visiting member, but the exact nature of my presence on the portfolio committee, whether it's alternative member or additional member, I'll clarify with the
due. Yeah, that's let's get that legal administration to be done with the committee secretary, so that you are marked appropriate.
Yeah. I think Chairperson, it should be clear because he's an additional member to the portfolio. So he is a member.
Can't be an additional member.
He is a member of the portfolio.
It's either the main member or an alternate member. And if he's an alternate member, will attend. Or he can attend to all these. But you can't have this thing called additional member. We don't have that.
All of us are
members deployed by the relevant political parties. And then others then will be alternate or main members from their political parties. So we know exactly then when there is a time for the vote, who are actually supposed to be voting, and then who votes when another member is not present. Honourable Manager, you wanted to say something?
Yes, you are technically correct. You can only be a member or an alternate. But there's also a provision that any member of parliament is free to attend any committee and participate.
But you can't.
That's the first category, but the DA will have to indicate at some stage who are the members and who are the alternates, and then if there are other members attending, they are welcome to attend, but they are not entitled to vote.
So I think that I'm raising this particular matter because he's always with us, and then why should you call him a visiting member? You know. Okay, and then the first page. No problem. Then the second page. The apology was only for S.D. Nkomo. None, and then the third page.
The one question, it says the committee members ask questions on the presentation and delegation led by the minister to be able to respond. Is it normal practice to just refer it in summary like this, or do we normally give some indications for the questions or not?
Which page? Where are we now?
Yeah.
In the page 3.
Kind of the basic.
Okay. Yeah, it's on page 3.
Yeah.
Remember that with this on the it's the fourth quarter. On the fourth quarter, there is a report that will have to come out. That goes in the report and shall carry almost everything. Yeah. Okay. Anyone who moves for the adoption? And Dr. Gumede?
I move.
Honorable Gumede moves for the adoption of this set of minutes. Honorable Kenyon? Honorable Kenyon seconded the adoption of the minutes. Honorable members, that brings us to the end of this meeting, and I thank you all, and let me understand the agenda.
Thank you.
achieve anything with Trader. But let's see something has started.
Yeah.